An economic response that is equal to the scale of the disruption that COVID-19 is causing, 10% of GDP, or simply a 500 billion rand bazooka to help the nation find its feet during this time. Trudy Makaya, economic advisor to President Cyril Ramaphosa, joins us on the line now with greater perspective around the stimulus plan that has been unleashed. Trudy, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us this evening. Well, the popular opinion in South Africa is not the IMF. I mean, Twitter was ablaze today, suggesting that South Africa has been sold to the IMF, to the World Bank. I spoke to a South African representative at the IMF last week, though, who dispelled that notion completely. And some could argue, as he would, right at the top, fact or fiction, according to you?
Thank you, and good evening to your viewers. Well, I think we have a lot of work ahead of us to dispel those myths around the IMF. I mean, I guess maybe let me begin by saying that, you know, the IMF and the World Bank and, you know, some of the multilaterals do have a history back in the 80s, even in the 90s, where they recommended policies to developing countries, particularly African countries, that were not necessarily appropriate. And imposed conditions that did not work for those countries. And Christine Lagarde herself, when she was at the IMF, acknowledged that history and said that they would do better for developing countries. Mm-hmm. So there is a history that we can't dismiss. At the same time, those institutions have come a long way in terms of taking into account the views of developing countries. And of course, we sit there both as members and as potential clients, but we also have a voice at those tables. But what's even more important in this instance is that as South Africa, as the AU, we went out to the world and said that we're not going to shoulder the burden of this pandemic on our own. It's not a crisis of our making, and the international community needs to show solidarity. Mm-hmm. And one way that solidarity is being shown is through emergency funding that's coming through the IMF, through the World Bank, and funding which clearly, explicitly does not come with any policy conditionality that would undermine sovereignty or that would tie the hands of policymakers.
Okay, so Trudy, that's the bottom line now, that we're looking at emergency loans with very little conditions attached and interest rates low. Another misunderstanding is around the overall 500 billion rand, that it isn't a cash injection, but it's made up of a range of items. So we've got budget reprioritization, tax reliefs, and breaks coming to the fore as well. How important is it to make those distinctions in terms of how this is all being funded?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was important for the president to indicate the impact of the package and also and reference it to GDP. But it is important to note that a big part of it is a guarantee. Some of it is reprioritization. So the additional funds that have to be raised that would come at a cost are limited by that. It doesn't have a cash flow impact. For instance, if you have a guarantee scheme, the idea being that you're trying to encourage the private sector to extend credit in a time when they would naturally not want to do it and when they would be risk averse, you're encouraging them to do it. But you're only on the hook as government if things go terribly wrong. And for the most part, these would be solid businesses. These have a track record, and they just need to get back onto their feet. So it is important to understand that, yes, we wanted to show the quantum and the impact of that package, but that it's not cash literally that government has to scramble to raise afresh. That, you know, there are obviously other programs in government that will have to be de-emphasized during this crisis, and money would come from there also.
What is being cut?
So that will come out very clearly in the budget, the revised budget that the finance minister will lay out, you know, very clearly. I mean, the direction that was given to departments was that, you know, this is the target that we're looking at, and do it in a deliberative, frame of mind. Think carefully about what is not essential at this stage, what can be postponed,
but at the same time protect what is crucial, what is critical, which is why obviously a big part of the reprioritization, for instance, would go to health, and they would not be expected to be engaging in any cuts. So it is a deliberate process, but, you know, I think that detail would come through in the revised budget.
Absolutely, and we wait with bated breath for that. Having said all of that, I've got to ask, because this is the overarching concern right now, Trudy, are we yet to feel the recourse as taxpayers down the line? Someone is going to have to foot this bill at the end of the day, and many saying even if it is eventually.
So we will have to pay for it, but you know, the most ideal way to pay for any expenditure of this kind and to get our debt to GDP and deficit ratios back into gear is paying it through growth. And this is why the president talked about the phase three of the economic package, which would look at some of the reforms that we've been talking about for a while now, and also new fresh ideas about how we're going to generate growth in the economy. And so that will enable us to afford some of the measures that we're taking now.
Trudy, but yes, I mean, it's absolutely rhetoric, clear though, that no, you know, plan. We've heard for the longest while, many emphasizing that we need to see structural reform come to the fore in order to get this growth engine going again. And it's certainly something that the likes of the credit rating agencies haven't been convinced that South Africa has been getting anywhere near right for the longest while, even pre-COVID-19. So how does this start to initiate that structural reform, genuine structural reform?
Well, I mean, I think some of the criticism also has to take into account that some of the reforms had begun and are being rolled out. The energy market reform is underway. Spectrum reform is underway. But I guess Spectrum is a good example that it shows that, you know, the crisis also does add a different urgency and dimension to this, where it's stretching government to the limit. People are able to act quickly and to address emergency issues, and hopefully some of that momentum would be carried through even post-crisis. So, I mean, there's no way of sugarcoating this. Government is working differently from its usual operations. The speed and the efficiency is different. The level of cooperation with social partners is different. So, yeah. You know, I think just from the observations of this period, but also acknowledging that some of this work had in earnest begun, even though we hadn't gotten much credit for it, I think those two factors should, you know, say that there's a very strong possibility that most of the reforms that the president would like to see will actually be implemented.
I've got to ask you, and I want a simple digit answer here. How are you rating the government's execution capacity to actually deliver? 1 to 10.
So, as I say, you know, partnerships with social partners are also crucial. If I had to rate today, I would rate 7.
7. Let's leave it there. Trudy, always a pleasure chatting to you. Thanks so much for having joined us on the line this evening. That, of course, economic advisor to President Cyril Ramaphosa, Trudy Makhaya, on the line now with his assessment of the measures and what it means for the economy. Isaiah Mhlanga, who's executive chief economist at Alexander Forbes. Thanks so much, Isaiah, for your time today. So are you convinced that we've got a rational strategy that's been laid out here with execution capacity to actually deliver?
Look, I think if we consider the economic environment where we find ourselves in, it's really, these are unusual times, and unusual times require some unusual responses, which is what we have currently. Obviously, the agreement within the ruling party and within Labour to go to the likes of the IMF for funding, obviously, it's not conditional. I think that's one step in a good direction. And I think we will have an economy where we can rebuild from after COVID-19, because it was quite crucial to cushion the poor that don't have jobs. It's quite crucial to also protect small, medium enterprises by giving that a loan guarantee to make sure that we still have businesses that are going to operate and going to grow the economy after COVID. So I am convinced, but I think as we have seen before, the capacity of the state to actually execute and implement some of these structural reforms for me remains a big question mark.
The big concern, Isaiah, is whether or not, and this is where some of the convincing needs to be done from South African government side, is that this isn't a case of throwing good money after bad, right?
No, for now, I think with the evidence that we have seen over the past couple of months, there is a good movement in a good direction. The private sector and business seems to be speaking with one mind that we have to rebuild South Africa's economy. But also there is a general consensus across different social partners. I think that's something that is quite important that we didn't have previously. So it seems COVID-19 has just pushed everybody in the same direction. And because of this, we are likely to get better outcomes than what we had before.
Unfortunate that it's this that's the catalyst to, actually push us in the right direction. I've got to ask, though, Isaiah, I came across a tweet from Glenn Silverman today highlighting that amongst the cons of this 500 billion rand economic package is that more debt pushes South Africa into a potential debt trap. Is that a risk you're pricing in?
It is a big risk. And obviously, out of the 500 billion, it's not all new money. Perhaps what is going to be new money is something about 200 billion rand, which if you factor it into what we had in terms of the fiscal deficit in February, it pushes the fiscal deficit around 14% of GDP. And obviously this has to be financed by tax revenue from future economic growth. Now, if we fail to grow the economy in a way that is going to generate enough tax revenues, then we are going to run into problems in terms of servicing our debts. Already in February, our debt-to-GDP ratio was unsustainable, which means it didn't peak. It continued to rise without peaking. So this is a big risk, but obviously where we are, I think this is the best that we can do. We just have to make sure that the economy grows in future, which is why the structural reforms are quite crucial. We cannot do without them. Every sector of society must rally behind them so that we have an economy that can grow, that can create jobs, enlarge the tax base, and also become able to service the debt that we are
especially
carrying.
Especially, Isaiah, if you're considering the various relief measures on the, especially the social side, coming through in terms of grants and social relief, broadly speaking, because you actually need growth and job creators to boom in order to afford this on a sustainable basis. Do you think that what's being packaged together is going to be setting us down a dangerous path or not necessarily?
Now, look, a big chunk of what is going to be spent on the social side, grants, unemployed people, I think that is a reprioritized money. It's not new debt. It's already in the existing budget. It's just being shifted from, non-core items to where it is required currently, which is fighting the COVID-19. So that does not necessarily increase our debt. And obviously the economy is both the demand side and supply side. So increasing demand through spending will stimulate the supply side. So I wouldn't say the expenditure that is being done in terms of the healthcare spending or in terms of social grants necessarily worsens our debt. It is what we are going to borrow from the external funders that worsens our debt. Of course, we just need to be able to pay for it in future.
Absolutely. Let's leave it there. Thanks so much for clearing that up. Isaiah is Executive Chief Economist at Alexander Forbes.